Can we get anybody from the department or Transnet to deal with the presentation?
Transnet is there. I'm worried. Mama Mzimela.
Morning, sir.
Morning.
Can I please have control for the presentation? I need to fly to presentation.
Yes, they can give you to coast.
Thank you.
Loli, can you coast?
Yes, I'm helping him, sir.
Okay.
Connected.
Slowly, okay. It must be Vusi, not me, Vusi.
You have co-hosted Lebohang.
Vusi, can you please confirm connection?
Yes, I can share.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Apologies, Chair. I thought somebody was trying. Thank you. Good morning, Chair, once again, and also to the portfolio, the select committee members. We thank you for the opportunity to present them this morning.
Good morning, Chair, and members of the Select Committee at Porsche Derby. People wait.
Ms. Derby, I don't know if you would like me to go with the first slide, or will somebody else be dealing with that before we move into TFR?
Oh, apologies, I struggled to connect, so I didn't know that we'd actually already started. Chair, if I may just apologize profusely, we have today a long-standing strategic engagement with Labour, which starts at 10 o'clock. Which I have to attend or else I'm going to be in trouble there. And the change in the schedule has also meant that it makes it quite difficult to toggle between the two meetings. But we have an agreement that I can be a bit late there, but I definitely have to be to leave here at about 10, and then I'll keep coming back. However, we've got Ms. Sizam Zimela, who's the CEO of TFR, as well as Mr. Velile Dube, who would be making presentations on the content as it relates to the issue of COVID. Furthermore, Chair, I'd like to apologize for Dr. Sydney Mofumadi, who is the acting chair of Transnet for the next month or so. He also had a clash as a result of the shift. He could have made 10 o'clock. He's got an engagement which will mean that he only gets here at 10 as well. I know that we've got Ms. Ramphaka, Gratitude board member, and Mr. Aluwani, who's Rambulant, who's also going to be present for today. Melitabe and Dr. Mukumadi may start coming at 10 as indicated. Thank you very much, Chair. Yeah, Cesar, you can start. Sorry.
Chairperson?
Mr. Arnold?
Chairperson, sorry for interrupting the session now, but I have a concern now here. Because what is the exercise now of having a Transnet here and the CEO is not going to stay for the full duration of the meeting? In terms of accountability and also the acting chair or whatever the case may be of the board. I can't see how exercise we are going to do what we're supposed to do. So I'm asking for your guidance here because it is not gonna be for us as members of parliament that is doing oversight and that is now sitting here and then we're not gonna get those answers maybe or just in terms of the accountability of the people that is supposed to be here is not here.
Thank you very much, Honorable Arnold. I think if we allow them to make a presentation, we can have responses before the CEO can leave us. We need also to apologize because we had to reschedule the meeting. You will remember the meeting was supposed to start at 12. So it has caused a lot of inconvenience to Transnet as well because they had already scheduled their meeting. We had to reschedule because there was another meeting of chairs with the AG just after 12. So if we can't have whatever we want, I would request that we can still call Transnet to come back. But for the sake of this meeting, we can allow them to make a presentation as quickly as possible. If we've got questions, they will be able to respond before they can even leave the meeting. If there are any other issues, we can call the Transnet to come back again. I'm just requesting the indulgence of the committee members.
I agree with you, Chair. Let the Transnet present. If there are the issues, then you can say they must go. You can call them again. But today, because they are here, let them present.
Yeah.
Okay. Present.
See you.
Sorry. Yeah.
Honorable Anas.
Chairperson, yeah, sorry, no. I think we have also, as the committee, in terms of the day of our meeting, we have raised this issue a lot of time in terms of also the ministers not being able to attend our meetings. So I don't know how we're going to go forward now with
Yes, Honorable Arnold, I think the issue of the meeting we have requested, I think the staff must assist us. We have requested that it's better for us to reschedule the meetings, make them late, because every Wednesday there is cabinet meeting. So if we can push them maybe to 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, it's going to be fine so that we don't experience these challenges. Lolly, please let's attend to the issue of time for the next meetings so that we don't experience challenges moving forward. See you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'd really like I'm quite grateful that we go ahead with the presentation. I'm clear that I'm toggling between the two meetings. And Chair, really, we're trying our best to make sure that we honour both engagements because, as indicated, the Labour engagement was one that was planned for quite a while ago, and there are actually quite a lot of burning issues that we need to deal with on that side. But the team that we have that will stay throughout the session is the EXCO team. It's the leadership team of Transnet. I've asked Andrew Shaw, who's our chief strategy, who's also on the call, to start with the first presentation, and then Ms. Nzimela and Mr. Dube will follow up on the slides that talk directly to their organization. But we've also got the board members that I have indicated. So we are paying serious attention to this presence. I will be here as long as possible, and as indicated, we'll jump between the two meetings. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, let's get the presentation.
Chairperson, I hope you can hear me. I will present the first slide, which is really in respect of financial performance. And then I'll hand over to Sizwe Mzimela, who will follow on with the rail, and then we'll follow on with ports thereafter. So let me just get stuck in. What I think we're all aware of is that the impact of COVID over 2020 has been very severe on all business and the economy of South Africa, particularly during the lockdown period, which we regard as the quarter two period. We have seen a decline in the first quarter of 2020 of around 9.5 to 10% in overall economic GDP reduction, which is significant. There has, as a consequence of this, been low customer demand, and it's driven a reduction in volume for all our key operations in the rail, port and pipeline area. And I'll talk to some of the specifics of that as we go forward. So if we compare ourselves to the previous year, we're well down on those volumes. I guess that's the bad news. What is quite encouraging is that we're seeing the volumes pick up quite significantly now to in the last month or so, particularly in respect of export of commodities. According to financial performance, the decline is quite significant.
And their credibility is at an all-time low on these surveys. Be that as it may, I agree with you. If you give no feedback,
I don't know if I should.
I'm 100% on board.
Mr. Makololo,
and don't expect to
change. Mr. Makololo,
I'm 100% on the same page.
Sorry, Mr. Makololo, you are disrupting our meeting. You can continue, Andre.
Okay, thank you very much. Whilst there's been slight savings in operating expenses, because we can reduce some costs during this period, the reality of our business is that it's a large fixed cost business, particularly in respect to the assets that we hold. They're not assets that we can sell. They're not assets that we can stop leasing over the period of time. And we also have a significant labor cost that we need to ensure is compensated during the COVID pandemic. So our operating expenses, whilst they're down, we've not been able to reduce these as much as the reduction in revenues that we get from reduced demand in the market over the last period. So if I can go to the revenue picture, perhaps the area of the economy that's been the most dramatically impacted is the domestic area. So in respect of domestic demand, we know that there is restrictions on consumer spending, largely as a consequence of people not being able to, during the lockdown period, actually physically go to stores. That impact has been a little longstanding in that people also have lower consumable income. And so as a result, we've seen drops in demand, particularly in containers, which is quite often import focused. We've also seen significant drops in automotive exports. As you will see, there's a depressed economy globally, so the demand for autos fell off dramatically. In both those areas, we're starting to see a pickup. However, the pickup in autos and containers is still quite muted, and it's not yet anywhere close to the 2019 equivalent levels. The same is true for petroleum, where we have the pipeline from Durban to Gauteng. It's been heavily impacted by the lockdown and the fact that people have not been able to use their vehicles. Again, we see that picking up, but it's not quite at the same level that it was. Where we have seen considerable pickups, and let me talk to this because this, I think, is the good news, is that on the commodity export lines around iron ore, manganese, coal, we have seen pickups that are very close to back to 2019 levels. So the global demand for those commodities has continued to be sustained. And the pricing of most of those commodities, except for coal, has also continued to be sustained. So we have a reasonably favorable outlook in those areas in the 2021 plan, and we expect to catch up some of those volumes, which will bring back some of the anticipated revenue that we would need to offset our cost base. So I'm quite encouraged by that. In terms of operating expenses, we are challenged, as I've said, we are challenged by reducing our cost base during COVID, but we have a project underway through a review of our procurement practices to review all our existing contracts, and we hope to have approximately a 20% saving into the next financial year through a reduction in pricing and renegotiation of some of those contracts. We also have an aggressive process of managing working capital. And at the bottom of the slide on the right-hand side, you will see that we are driving a much more focused approach to where we invest in capital expenditure. Some of our capital expenditure was impacted by COVID and the fact that contractors weren't able to work on site. So by default, we've also reduced capital expenditure on certain projects through the COVID crisis without being in our control. However, going forward, we are very clear that our capital expenditure needs to be brought in line with what the business can afford. If I can pass on now to Cesar, who will take us through some of the TFR presentation, which relates to the questions that you've specifically asked. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Andrew. And thank you once again, Chair. This first slide, Chair, I will just go through very quickly because essentially what it actually shows is the key focus areas for Transnet Rail going forward, which talks to our focus on improving the infrastructure. Secondly, improving some of the issues relating to the safety and security on our network. Thirdly, I mean, driving cost and working a lot more closely with our partners as in PRASA, given that we have a shared infrastructure which sometimes either has a positive or negative impact on the types of volumes that we're able to move on our infrastructure. So this is really a slide that actually highlights what will be our key focus areas in trying to ensure that we increase the movement of goods on rail, and at the center of all of that being a customer focus going forward. If we could please move to the next slide. On the next slide, Chair, we then start to respond to the specific questions that were requested of us to put together for this morning, which talks to our COVID experience, the lessons learned, and then further on, I will also then highlight the impact of volumes that the pandemic has had on our business. I have chosen to actually show three slides as it pertains to the trends relating to COVID. This first one being as at the 31st of August. I do have a follow-up slide which will then show as of to date what our experience has been in terms of positive cases that have been identified and how we have actually dealt with the individuals and allocating operational people versus the support employees. So at the end of the 31st of August 2020, you will see that, I mean, and this is purely from a TFR perspective, which is Transnet Freight Rail, which is the rail side, we had 1,116 cases that had been identified. And at that point, unfortunately, we had lost 15 of our colleagues, but we were already seeing a very good recovery, sitting at 91% recovery rate. What we did during the period and also to help to manage our operations a lot more efficiently and effectively is that all of these cases we were able to identify them and understand from the impact on each of the corridors on which we operate. So if you look at this dashboard, it demonstrates that in terms of us trying to track where we had the highest level of an infection in the different corridors, which are more or less aligned to the provinces to an extent, because if we look at Cape Coast, that talks, to the Western Cape, area. But when we look at NATCO, NATCO would be the line that runs from Gauteng through to KwaZulu and Natal. So it was important for us to be able to track the infections according to corridors in order to be able to respond and ensure that we were still trying to move as much of the volume as we required. At the bottom of this dashboard, what you will also see is that we're equally tracking the number of people who were rostered from an operational perspective and the number of people who were present at work from a support environment. What was done, from a Transnet perspective is that immediately, for all of the individuals who were over 60, we found a way to ensure that as far as possible, they were given the tools of trade to be able to continue to work, from home. But we also had experiences of people where they had to they work from home due to chronic underlying conditions that they had. On the support side of our business, it was a little bit easier because effectively we tried to only have the minimum number of people that were required actually present in the offices, and most of the people, as far as possible, working from home. I will talk a little bit further on the lessons learned on the operations side of the business. But even there, we did actually have to put through various rosters to ensure that we were aligned, with the national regulations and at any given point in time as to the number of people that were actually present in our environment. As part of that, we did obviously find ourselves under a lot of pressure because a number of our people in the operation area were identified to have chronic or underlying conditions. And as a result, it created some difficulty for us in that be able to rebuild some of the rosters without impacting on the operations as far as possible. If we move to the next slide, Chair, what it does is that it's a similar dashboard as at the 30th of September. I don't know how far in the presentation. Could you please move to the next slide, please? Yeah, so this table is providing similar information as the previous dashboard, but what I thought would be useful to actually show was that what we're seeing is now we're beginning to see a slowdown in the new infections being identified. And when we started under lockdown, we were actually registering in the region of about 30 new cases overnight within the TFR space. What we're finding now is that we have dropped to single digit new infections on a daily basis, and we're seeing an even greater improvement in terms of recovery. So in the previous slide, I would have shown you that our recovery rate was sitting at 91% at the end of August. As at the end of September, the recovery rate is now sitting at 95%. And during that period, we were unfortunately faced with one further a death, but we are seeing definitely a declining trend. What that helped us to do as well is that now we're able to to bring a lot more people, you know, back to work, and a lot more people could then be rostered, you know, as well, I mean, in the operations. So unfortunately, the two dashboards are not sitting side by side, but the real purpose of showing this is just to see the improvement month on month that we are now beginning to record in terms of a decline in new cases, and equally, we seem to have reached a point where there is a significant improvement in the, in our recovery, you know, rates. I'd like to then move to slide 9, please. And on slide nine, what we're showing here is the lessons learned. That whilst we started very slow, and you know, this is something that hit us quite hard initially, and created a lot of confusion, and had quite a significant negative impact on our operations. But we soon learned that there were certain things that we could do to actually limit the rate of infection, as I've actually demonstrated in the dashboards that I showed, I mean, previous to this slide. And one of the key things that we had to do and learn to do was that in the past, you would find that a train driver is allocated multiple train assistants at any given point in time. And we found that that led to a significant exposure of a greater number of people than we would have actually wanted or anticipated. So one of the things that we then did is that we started to allocate train assistants to a specific train driver, so that when there is a case of infection, it's limited to those individuals as far as possible, and it helps, I mean, to limit the spread beyond various rostered teams. We also created an environment where our people were able to now sign off at different locations, so that we would limit them coming into contact with each other as they sign on and sign off to operate, I mean, their shifts. We equally aggressively implemented the work from home protocols as far as possible, which you would have seen in the numbers that I showed in the previous dashboards relating to the number of people that we were able to facilitate working, I mean, from home as opposed to coming through to the workplace. And there was proactive management of the chronic underlying chronic cases of employees through our clinics and our panels to make sure that we would try to persuade, I mean, people to stay at home as far as possible, because we actually did experience cases of individuals that still wanted to come to work even though they had actually been identified as high-risk individuals. And it was really just required us to be proactive in managing those cases as well. From a support services perspective, it was a lot more easier to manage because we implemented an A and B team, so there would be no overlap between the teams. And the A team would come on certain days, the B team would come on certain days of the week to avoid or to ensure minimum interaction between the various teams. The last slide then talks to the impact, the direct impact of COVID on our performance and what we were able to do. On the slide, what we're just showing that under level 5, we were obviously still in a position to move the essential commodities, and we did continue to rail commodities such as fuel and chemicals and the agriculture products in terms of grain and timber. And we were still able to move the import containers, as my colleague Andrew indicated earlier on, and the coal side of the business. And that can be seen in the direct numbers that we're able, to register in the month, of April. So from a performance perspective, in April, we only achieved 62% of what was the original budget because of the significant decline in certain of the corridors, and especially as it pertained to the general freight business. What we saw is that we're still able to do relatively well on export coal, which was the export coal plus, I mean, the coal that was going to power, you know, towards power generation and energy, I mean, for the hospitals and prisons. So on that, you will see on the numbers to the right that we were able to meet 86% of our initial budget on export coal. But on other commodities like export iron ore, we moved only 80% of what we had initially projected in the month of April. But where we were most hit was on the general freight business, because that talks to the movement of the automotives and some of the containers. But as much as we moved containers, I mean, the containers that we moved were the export containers, which had, I mean, the essential services. So anything which was non-essential, we were not able to move in the month of April. And that did have a negative impact on our overall performance, where we ended up, you know, registering only 62% of our performance. If we look at the areas in terms of business units, I mean, quite specifically, you will see, as I have already mentioned, that it's the containers and automotive industry where we did really badly. We were the mining industry had not returned fully, you know, I mean, as yet. So we saw a decline in the movement of the mineral mining and chrome, and likewise a depressed market in relation to cement and steel. But by the time we moved to level four, and some of the non-essential products were partially being moved, we started to actually see an improvement of our numbers through each of the different levels of lockdown. So under level four, the coal export line remained, I mean, operational. On the oil line, we then started to have a reduced service on that, and we started to move a little bit of steel and cement, you know, and some of the chrome and magnetite also, I mean, restarted. We've shown, you know, all of the additional commodities that we were able to then add on to the initial commodities as we move through the different levels. And to the right, in terms of numbers, you will see that we have progressively improved on our performance. So when we started in April, it was an overall performance of 62%. And in May, we shot up to 79%. And as at the end of September, we were at 96% of what was our initial, budget. And then if you look in terms of the detail of that, in terms of where we have seen, you know, the greatest recovery, it is, I mean, especially on the export lines in terms of export coal and export iron ore. And we, although we have seen a significant improvement on the general freight business, if I call your attention just to the second block of the numbers, which is the NEPCO line, which is the Natal corridor, under the heading called corridors, there's a Natal corridor. You will see there that we started at 54%. We were able, with the ease of lockdown, to start to move those, what we're moving on that corridor, up, I mean, to 82%. And then all of a sudden, we started to see a decline, I mean, once again, in our performance. And that is no longer relates, you know, to the COVID pandemic. If anything, in May and June, we had the benefit of the lockdown, that there was less theft of cable on that particular corridor. But once there was an ease of a further lift of the lockdown conditions, the high theft of cable then returned, you know, to face as a challenge, and it is actually impacting on our performance. But overall, you know, Chair and the portfolio committee, we continue, you know, to see an improvement in the movement of the commodities that we need to move. And as I indicated, we, from a TFR perspective, are faced with a different challenge right now. That easing of the lockdown has resulted in increased theft and increased community unrest, which then sometimes disrupts the movement of the volumes on the various lines. But from an outlook perspective, we do see as the only commodity that basically is steady at this point in time is export coal, but we're seeing an increase in our book orders on iron ore, on manganese, and domestic coal and chrome ore, which then basically indicates that we really do have an opportunity to recover, provided that we can resolve the new challenges that we now face as it relates to that. I'll stop there, Chair.
Thank you very much. Was it the last slide?
Chair, we've got
No,
two.
Chair, there's okay. One more slide, Chair.
Okay.
That I will take the committee
Velile
through.
Dube.
Yes, it's Velile Dube. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. And good morning to members of Transnet Board and Transnet colleagues. Chair, I will focus on how we managed COVID within the Transnet port terminal environment. As you would be aware, Chair, we operate 16 terminals along the coast. And a lot of the volume that my previous colleague moves, we receive through our facilities. The slide that I am going to show you is talking to how COVID has had an impact on our people to the extent that it impacted our capacity to produce, but also how we've been able to arrest the increase in infection rate that allowed us to start improving our service to our customers. Our service to our customers is reflected in the slide on the right at the top right hand. It really talks to berthing delays, which talks to how long it takes a ship to find a loading zone within the terminal in order to be loaded or offloaded. Chair, you will see that in June, we had a huge spike in the berthing delays. And this really happened in Cape Town, where there was absolute noise in terms of these delays affecting trade, affecting movement of goods in and out of our facilities. And Cape Town is a very interesting port because it is normally a first port of call from vessels arriving from Europe. And because our ports runs as a system, where vessels stops in Cape Town, stops in the Eastern Cape and goes to Durban and find its way back again through the same stops. So it was important that we fix Cape Town as quickly as we could so that we can restore the integrity of the network in the fastest possible time. I will talk about what we did to improve the performance in Cape Town so that the entire network can benefit. I move back to the first slide on top on the left-hand side, which really talks to the numbers. We have up to now, 31st August 2020, 708 positive cases. However, what's pleasing is the recovery number that you see there, which is the recovery rate of 96.2% at absolute number of 681.
and sad to say that we lost 12 colleagues, which is a sad situation for us. And at this moment, Chair, we have 14 active cases and two that are in quarantine. We then, Chair, decided to focus on Cape Town because this is where we were hit the hardest. This is where we were initially hit. The infection rate in Cape Town were extremely high. As my colleague Caesar mentioned earlier on, it created a lot of confusion. It created a lot of uncertainty. As management, we were not trained, prepared for such a business interruption that affects life and livelihood. So we really had to learn, as I say, to fly an aeroplane as we fix it. But I'm pleased to say, Chair, that the team, with the support of the executives from group, who were able to respond, and the intervention, it was deep and it was quick, as you see the fall in the chart in the number of bedding delays in Cape Town. What we did, Chair, we had to learn how to protect our people by finding ways of separating our teams, deploying them in different facilities so we can be able to track who is with who, so the tracing and tracking of people affected can be a lot more easier. We converted some of our offices into facilities for staff so that we can create enough separation. We focused on the transportation that was taking them from home and work to make sure that the protocols there are adhered to. We drove hard on the education campaign, not only at work, but also empowered our employees to be able to go and share the same messages in their communities and in their home. And what we saw, Chair, was a rapid reduction in infection rates in Cape Town. We increased a number of teams with people coming back to work. And as you can see, Chair, in the chart at the bottom on the left, we had delays in days of up to 22 days, vessels waiting outside. As the number of teams increased, as recoveries increased, as we understood how to manage the protocols and how to educate, empower, you can see how the number of delays have significantly come down. And I'm very pleased to say, Chair, that as of today, the 31st of August, in Cape Town, vessels are able to find a berthing slot on arrival. This, Chair, also happened at the very height of our citrus export program. And with this challenge and with all the intervention, I'm also pleased to report, Chair, that we saw that the citrus volume this year...
Your call has been placed on hold. Please wait.
Chair, am I still audible? I get a message that I'm on hold.
Your
am
call I... has been placed on hold.
No,
please wait.
You are not the one. The phone that is on hold is...
Your call has been placed on hold. Please wait.
The iPhone 12 of Shoki. Shoki's iPhone 12. Can it be muted, please?
Thank you, Chair. So, Chair, as you can see, as I indicated, that as of today, the 31st of August, the vessels are able to berth on arrival, and the customers are being able to be served as they arrived. And the benefit of that is that the entire network from the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal is returning to balance. We are not where we need to be, Chair, as we still need to push hard in reducing the delays to lower numbers. As you can see in the Durban area, we're still on around 3 days of delays, and we need to bring that number down as we recover. Chair, the berthing delays, as I say, are currently at their lowest, and the entire system is actually benefiting. And what we're doing now is to make sure that we retain the protocols. We have not relented on making sure that everyone adheres to the protocols as outlined. We are also continuing to ask our employees to remain vigilant now. And we are also fortunate, Chair, that in KwaZulu-Natal, for some reason, the infection rate at inception was not as high, same as in the Eastern Cape. And we believe that the benefit of lessons learned from Cape Town, we transferred them to those part of our network. And as I can say right now, Chair, that we seem to have this infection rate under control. We're seeing probably one infection a week. Some weeks we're having zero infection in the entire network. So thank you very much, Chair. I'll leave it there and we'll take any questions.
Thank you very much. And thanks for the presentation. Honorable members, I'll start with Honorable Arnold, Honorable Nana, and Honorable Modise. I saw Honorable Ngwenya was in. She might be having the challenge of network. I'll attend to her as soon as she's around. Honorable Arnold.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also thank you for Transnet's presentation. Chairperson, I think let me also just say condolences to those families that have lost workers during this time of COVID-19, and we extend our condolences to those families. Chairperson, yes. My first a question that I have in terms of the procurement practice in this time of COVID-19. We haven't heard anything about the procurement. Was there any illegal, unlawful, corrupt activities in terms of procurement and things like that then? I think we need to get a list of the reduced capital expenditure in terms of which projects was now reduced in terms of the capital expenditure. I think we need to have an indication in terms of which projects. There is a Transnet, according to the National Treasury report, Transnet is very inefficient and expensive. How is the department assisting the entity? This is now for the department. They can also answer this one. Assisting the entity to correct this trend now in terms of the financial viability of the entity. And then, Chairperson, the cable theft issue that is now coming on a long time, and that is going to be every time when we have Transnet or the entity to challenge the impact on their operations and their performance is every time impacting heavily on their work or on their performance in terms of what they have to deliver. But we haven't seen anything comprehensive in terms of a plan to curb cable theft, seeing that it has an impact on the infrastructure and also the performance of the entity. I'll leave that a few questions and then I will come with follow-ups. Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nana.
Well, thanks, Chairperson, and good morning to colleagues. Chair, as I initially advised that I will ask to be excused at 10. I'm booked for another meeting. Chair, well, secondly, I am pleased that turnaround time in our ports was managed very well. As you will know, that key to the success of this industry is the amount of time vessels spend in your port. So I'm pleased that Transnet did try and do their level best in ensuring that vessels don't spend a lot of time on our ports. Honorable Arnold touched on cable theft, but I would want to extend it, Chair, to the issue of the Durban-Johannesburg pipeline. And I have seen some adverts by Transnet regarding fuel theft in that pipeline. Besides the advert, very clearly, Chairperson, COVID-19, people have lost jobs, criminal activity is likely to be on the up. What else is Transnet doing to mitigate theft of fuel in the Durban-Johannesburg pipeline? That's the first question, Chair. And the second question, Chair, may not necessarily be related to what Transnet presented this morning, but I would still want to ask it, Chair. I know countries like Kenya had plans to develop their own big ports. I would want to check to what extent have African countries benefited from, considering that they were not that heavily impacted by COVID, to what extent has our loss been their gain? And if so, how are we hoping to reverse that and regain lost ground, if there is any? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Nana. Honorable Mdise.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me greet honorable members and everybody in the meeting, the officials from Transnet and the officials from the department. Chairperson, I've got one question or two questions, but before I go to my question, I just want to stress on the point that the presenter, when she presented, she mentioned about the high of the rate of the theft. I know Honorable Honorable Arnold mentioned about it, but they must, Transnet must come up with a strategy to resolve this issue of theft of cable in the set of cables. So that one I wanted to stress about it. And then my question is, Chairperson, before COVID-19 pandemic, we have a big problem of truck damaging the road. And this has been a long-standing problem. Those solutions in a way depend on Transnet expanding their freight capacity one. I want to know Transnet, they have a plan to practically address the challenges on this today or in future. The second question is, every time there was a dispute between Brasa and Transnet, between the Brasa about the amount that they owe after they maintaining their trains. Has this matter been resolved? If Transnet can share with the committee, whether how did they resolve it
or they are still going to resolve it, because it was a serious challenge to them. Those are my questions, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mdize. Honorable Ngwenya.
Thanks, Chairperson. And I hope you did get my apology. We're starting to another meeting. I don't know how do they program.
We got it. Meeting was clashing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Chair, I've got possible questions. But firstly and most, let me take this opportunity to welcome the presentation from the Transnet. Honorable Chairperson, my line of question will focus much on the vandalism of the theft of the Transnet freight rail assets, which occurred mostly during the period of lockdown on the strategic economic infrastructure. I would like to ask the following question, Chair. To what extent has the lockdown impact on the effort of the Transnet security team in working in collaboration with a number of law and from SAPS, National Intelligence, to fight vandalism of the rail infrastructure, capable theft and looting of the Transnet? How, Honorable Chair, I am raising these questions with a heavy heart because there are many people who depend on the service of the Transnet and the continuous theft of the cables on train lines means that majority of our people are not able to go to work and to do their daily task. During the period of the lockdown, Chairperson, from alert level 5 to the current alert 11, which rail network corridors were common targets for theft, looting and vandalism? The freight rail in the largest operating division of the Transnet and has run through the pillow paper healthcare trains. Is there any contribution by the pillow paper health trains provided to mitigate the impact of the COVID-19? If yes, what kind of health care services were provided and which province? And if no, why not? Chair, I thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I just want to emphasize on the PPE procurement. I think in terms of the presentation, nothing was indicated as part of the mitigating whether there were challenges in relation to that procurement, so that we don't come here and when we go we hear no, Transnet was there, but these are the challenges from Transnet. I think we should look into that. And the reduction of congestion from the road network, what is our strategy in that regard? And lastly, the emphasis on the issue of cable theft. I think it's one area that we need to get what are the strategies of Transnet to deal with that. Honorable Nana, you want to say something before I hand over to them?
Yes,
Are you fine?
I'm fine, Chair. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Transnet, it's your time. We can, yeah, we can respond.
Thank you, Chair. We will respond across the board, I mean, between all of us. I think I just want to indicate that Dr. Mofumadi has now joined the meeting. So, Chair, may I please seek your indulgence? I'm really going to be in trouble with the unions. If I can leave at 10:30, please. The Honourable Member, the question around what are the changes to CAPEX that we've undertaken, we'd be more than happy to come back and give an indication. But we're going through a process of governance processes with the board to just make sure that there's clarity on all of our governance, on what it is that we're going to proceed with and what we're cutting. And then there's the obvious delays that just happened because of lockdown at level 5. In fact, up to about level 3, virtually most of the engineering companies were not operational. So most of the big projects were not able to proceed. In fact, at that point, when some of our major suppliers were in lockdown, we even had challenges receiving the straddle carriers. I think it got quite tight towards the end because we almost had to take them assembled already, which then jeopardized the jobs that we would have had out of that exercise because we desperately needed them as well for our operations. Chair, with regard to the PE procurement, we have really tried to make sure that we had a very clear centralized process. But to be frank, at the beginning of the crisis, we needed to be distributing PPE right across the country to all of our operations. And I think as both Cesar and Velile have indicated, it was actually quite a sharp learning curve and quite the interesting. We can send you a paper that we've subsequently have written, because what we did do was to set up a structure at corporate center, which was made up of the operating people right across the organization, who coordinated our actions, how we deployed people, who was off, and so that we would make sure that we were able to meet, to be reliable and meet all of the demands as and when they arose. Also bearing in mind at the same time, there were the new regulations, which we'd never had to deal with. Both neither had been done by government or the system, the whole just economy, where we would then start implementing and find that, no, it doesn't quite work well. We would then have to go back and do revision. So it was actually quite a very fluid period, extremely dynamic when we had to be responding. I remember that there was one weekend where we virtually were rushing around trying to sort out regulations around what's an essential container and what's a non-essential container. And we were trying to explain to people that a container would have both essential and non-essential. And we were trying to deal with the police to make sure that the containers would be able to go out of port because they wanted to make sure that everything inside was only essential. So it was a bit of a difficult period in the beginning. Why I raised that is that so initially we vacillated. We were not sure whether we should keep the procurement of PPE central at corporate center or we should let the various ODs run with their own procurement. But it quickly got in the early stages to a point where it just made much more sense to let each of the ODs run their own PPE procurement so that we would quickly get to everybody and deal with the complaints that we were getting from workers. And frankly, a lot of people were quite justifiably afraid. And we had made the principal position that we would protect workers first and then worry about delivering the service. So we have had, for example, there was a 3 million procurement that we had to do via Dis-Chem. And it took us a while to get their BEE certificate, and that's something that we would have had to have sorted out. We also had to run quite a few of the procurements via petty cash. But what we've been doing is reviewing all of the procurement via the CPO, and on a monthly basis, we send a PPE procurement report till today to both the Department of Public Enterprise as well as Treasury. So we are keeping a watch and then also have ensured that in terms of prices, we were quickly able to get to stick with the price that Treasury had. I won't say that there were no blips, because in all likelihoods there were. But between our now much stronger internal audit function, this is an area that we will be reviewing and making sure that the controls are better in place. Chair, later in, and I imagine it's sometime next year, we would like to come and present to you some of the changes that we'd be making on the procurement processes as well and policies in Transnet, so that we have greater efficiency in as far as that's concerned. I'll let Caesar answer a lot more of the cable theft ones, but just to say that on security, one of the things that we've done in the structure was to once again re-establish the chief security function inside the corporate center. And what's that's been good about that is that we're starting to coordinate across our ODs, let alone coordination across SOEs, as well as ensuring that we are linking up with all of the law enforcement agencies. And that has actually been one of the biggest successes that we've had, where we've actually able to arrest people both stealing fuel as well as people on stealing cables. It's been quite, we've had some arrests. We have to watch and see how the cases go through, because it's actually now at the point where it's really crucial that we have at least one or two people being arrested using the economic crimes. I forget what the legislation is called, which enables us to have a minimum sentence of 15 years in prison for anyone caught stealing copper cable theft. We are working quite closely with also ESCOM and Telkom, as well as PRASA, to see how we might jointly be able to solve this problem, or at least to fight it. I'm not sure about the solution. I think the solution is a lot more for countrywide. I think one of the challenges that we have on the fuel pipeline is that only the valves, I know they're not called the valves, I'll remember the word, are regarded as national key points, but the line of the line itself is not regarded as a key point. And I suppose what they worried about was the kilometers, I mean, that it would be of transversal national key point. But we think it's actually quite essential that we revisit that decision, because the problem that we're having is not theft inside the block valves themselves, but rather we're having theft on with people tapping directly onto the line. And because that part of the line is not regarded as a national key point, it's not securitized in the same way as the valves themselves. But this is an area that we're working on. Hopefully we get to a point where that gets resolved. But we've been working closely with the Department of Mineral Resources around some of the issues on the that relate to regulation and monitoring. And the product that we find gets stolen most of all is diesel, which is an unregulated product. Fuel, hardly ever. Jet fuel also, hardly ever. But we've also been tightening control internally with ourselves, because clearly somebody must tell someone that there is diesel on the pipeline. Chair, can I let Caesar and Velile come in and answer some of the other problem questions that have been asked?
Yeah, that's fine. We are in your hands.
Thank you, Chair. I was going to respond, a little bit further to the cable theft, but the GCE has already talked about, the various partnerships that where group security is actually assisting us on in trying to reduce the theft levels of cable. But maybe just to give a little bit a bit more detail about what we are then also trying to do internally. And one of those things is acknowledging that we need to start to replace a lot of the copper cable with other cable that is a lot less attractive to thieves. So what we've actually started to do now is to replace, the copper cables with copper magnesium, which we are finding is less theft prone. But this is going to take us a three-year period to complete. So every single time when the cable is cut, right now, we are already beginning to replace it with the cable that we hope would be less attractive, to the thieves. So overall, we acknowledge that we're going to have to, as the TFR, make use of technology a lot more than what we have, previously, because, of the continuous, challenges. So that was the one initiative that we're pursuing, but we're also beginning to make more use of drones and to try and, catch the thieves. And we're looking at installing, CCTV. But with all of these things, we also equally realize that we need to actually improve our intelligence around these issues. Because what happens is that we identify a hotspot, we go into the hotspot, we make sure that there is a focused team and focused attention in resolving the issues in the area that is deemed a hotspot. And as soon as we're focused on that, they move to another area of our network. So it is a continuous challenge for us at this point in time. And hence, as I say, we're now looking to say, how do we actually also start to produce some of the product that we actually utilize, or the items that are lost more prone to theft, to protect them differently going forward using a technology and replacing copper with something else. There was a question relating to which of the corridor has been worst hit during this COVID period. I think I mentioned it earlier on that would have been the Natal corridor, because initially the highest level of theft was on our shared infrastructure with PRASA, which was in the Pretoria area, in the Krugersdorp area. So those were the areas where we were hit the highest during the COVID period. But I think that once they had stripped a lot of the cable in that area, they then started to move to what would be the Transnet infrastructure as well. Because in the Pretoria area, where they stole the cable, what we then decided to do jointly between ourselves and PRASA was not to replace the cable, but to rather to operate the diesel locomotives. And in that regard, we've also equally assisted PRASA, who are the ones who move our people, to also, we've assisted them by providing them with a few of the diesel locomotives so that they are able to also run their operation on those lines where we've removed some of the copper, the cable completely. There was the other question relating to what are we doing in trying to move the trucks off the roads. So it is a very key strategy focus area for TFR. And in this year alone, we've already managed in partnership with the various customers to move in the region of about 3,500 trucks off the roads. And they are now using rail as opposed to the road. But this has been in a collaboration with our customers, because in order for us to be able to move more of these trucks off the road and for them to use rail infrastructure, what we're finding more and more is that there's work that we need to do as Transnet, but equally the customers also need to do certain things on their side to allow us, to be able to move their commodities on rail. But it is a key focus area for us, and it remains work in progress. But we have seen some good, progress in the last few months in moving some of those trucks. I don't know if the GCE would like to also then maybe talk further about the issue around, PRASA and how we are managing some of the financial issues. I think the question was quite specific about a particular financial issue. Maybe my response to that is that we have been tasked to actually set up what is called, work streams between ourselves and PRASA. So we're currently engaging with them on a monthly basis on various areas in our business to try and find, various solutions to all of the things that remain or have remained a challenge between ourselves and PRASA. And I think, we're making good progress on that. Yes, they are still challenges around, payments between the two entities. And at the moment, though, we keep a running account effectively for some of the work, I mean, that we do jointly with them at this point in time. I think the other questions, the leader would probably be better placed to respond to.
Yeah, so thanks, Caesar. You've spoken about road to rail, more on the long haul. And I think Chair asked a specific question that relates to road congestion around the port. Maybe I should address that because it speaks more specifically about what has been to come to be commonly known as congestion on Bayhead Road that makes the news every day with Robben. What we have been able to do, and I think COVID and the congestion last year has really brought the whole industry together to a realization that congestion on the roads leading into the port is not just a Transnet problem. It is a precinct problem, and it has to be addressed as such. We were fortunate that after the president and the minister, Praveen, visited Durban to deal with the issue of congestion, a formal structure was formed that comprises of all the key stakeholders in and around the port of Durban to really challenge and deal with this issue of congestion in a much more systemic fashion. Just to illustrate the point, Bayhead Road has remained the same size for the last 20 years, and it is a road that's owned by municipality in Durban. And yet the port has seen bigger vessels, has seen more volumes, has seen more trucks coming in out of the port. We also have increased activities by other people who are in and around the port, who are managing depots and terminals, who are also feeding the activities through the port, the Bayhead Road. So what this structure has actually done is to now find solutions that reduces the number of trucks from Bayhead Road, and thanks Caesar has been able to increase the number of trains taking away trucks from Bayhead Road, trains that are feeding a bulk terminal from one of the private operators in Durban. That has taken quite a number of trucks off the road. We are starting to use all the assets we have in the Durban area, like the old Durban Airport, as a staging area for trucks, so we call them as and when they are required. The other big change and shift that we have been able to do, Chair, was to introduce a truck booking system so that trucks do not just arrive at the port, but like we all, when we go to a dentist, we make an appointment and we arrive at the time we are expected and we receive the service we were expecting. This initiative has helped us spread the flow of traffic in and to the port equally across the 24 hours we have. And part of this initiative as well, Chair, is to encourage the South African economy to become a 24/7 operation. We have these ports, we've invested in them, we've invested in equipment, but customers only want to use the ports between 8 and 5 o'clock. I think this is suboptimal use of these huge investments. So with the ease realization in this structure that to benefit from these ports and terminals, we have to operate 24 hours and the depots have to operate 24 hours and the packing houses have to operate 24 hours in order to maximize the use of these state assets. The second big thing that we are doing to reduce congestion, Chair, is to make sure that the quality of information we share amongst us as the terminal operator, the shipping lines, the trucking is accurate, is timely, so it helps better planning and better execution of our operation. It's a long way to go. A lot of it requires investment in systems that talk to us, standardization of our systems, and that is work in progress. We're trying to see how we can create a single platform from where everybody can transact without any delay. So we're seeing some good progress, Chair. 43% improvement in truck turnaround times in the port of Durban. The last time we've had a congestion, major congestion on Bayhead Road, it was somewhere around January and February. So we hope this is a sustainable solution, and we continue to put everything we can to make sure that becomes the way we do business going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I can just end before I can allow the the chair of the board, I can just send over to the CEO just to have remarks so that we can release her. We don't want workers to go on strike.
They're like a second away from going on strike. Let me just tell you from what everybody tells me on the other side. Thank you very much, Chair. Really, it'd be good to have an engagement where we focus. And I hope you'll come back to this very real issue of COVID and the impact that it's going to have on us, not just as Transnet, but also on the economy as a whole for a while yet. And quite the real dire and difficult situation that we're going to be in, to have to change the organization and turn it around at the same time when there's such significant pressure arising from the pandemic. And the pandemic's bigger problem is the fact that it's drying up demand across the world. So even if we were able to get around and start producing, what do you sell to? So it's actually quite a bit of a rough period, but it would be quite a privilege to be able to come back and have a discussion just on what we're seeing and the trends that we are noticing for the board members, for the committee members, the honourable members. I'd ask Mr. Nzimela to answer the question of Kila Pepper, because it's actually done some fantastic work during the COVID. It's now going for maintenance, but she'll indicate the data of all of the places that we've covered and the number of people that we have tested as well. Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you to the board members and the honourable members in the committee.
Thank you very much. We will, if there are issues that committee members would ask as follow-up, we'll send them. You'll give us responses in writing, but we'll remain with the other senior management that are here together with the acting chair of the board.
Thank you very much, Chair.
I just wanted you to release you so that my committee must not create another challenge there at Transnet.
Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much, honorable members. I hope we still have some follow-up questions. Ms. Mzimela, did you wanted to say something before I allow members to make follow-ups?
Yes, Chair. I just wanted to, I realized that, I mean, there was the question relating to Pelo Pepper that we had not responded to. So during the COVID period, the trains were deployed in KwaZulu-Natal and in the Eastern Cape province from May to July to assist the Department of Health with the screening and testing of COVID-19 cases. And then in August, Pelo Pepper has now actually reopened the rest of its clinics on board the train, which is what it had actually been doing, I mean, previously, and is now offering a full basket of primary health care services in the Gauteng and the northwest provinces. But I think that just the statistics, I mean, Chair, that between the months of May and July, the Pelo Pepper train assisted the Department of Health to do 127,000 screenings and testing for COVID-19. So there was a lot of work that was done by the train during the lockdown period, and it is and after the July period, it has now started to offer the full basket of services that it used to offer even previously, and is going through all of the various provinces where we are also treating patients on board, which is the service that it offers. We are also ensuring that items of medication are dispensed as the train actually goes through, the various provinces. And one of the key things, obviously, that Pelo Pepper is well known for is issuing of the spectacles and basic healthcare training, to individuals as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Before I give a follow-up, I can check with the acting chair of the board, Wafamadi. if there is anything that you want to say. Okay. We can go to follow up. You will make a final remarks if they're there. Honorable Arnold.
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, no, I think for me there is no real seriousness in terms of the protection of our infrastructure, our network. Because if we are saying now that it's going to take 3 years and it's going to take more years now to make copper less attractive in terms of cable theft and everything, it means now that we will just continue with the same trend in terms of damaging and the impact on the performance of the entity. So I think we need to give the department a directive in terms of what we need to do to check that there is continuous improvement in terms of our infrastructure network, because we can't leave it like that. We can't come and say now we're going to have CCTV camera. This is things we had to put in place long time ago. So I think we need to follow up strictly on this one, because we can't come for the next 5 years or 10 years and then we are sitting with the same challenge and we are not serious in terms of the protection of our network. But I think in terms of what we have requested and what the CEO has said now, I think we need those information so that we can, because we don't have the information that is needed in terms of the procurement, in terms of the capex that has been reduced, in terms of the prices that has been negotiated. Things like that, say, I think there is the information that is needed. So we just hope that we are going to get those information so that we can have a proper info in terms of the entity Transnet. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nana.
Chair, an issue that is really close to an issue that is really close to my heart, trucks on, too much trucks on our road, on our roads. I'm glad that an effort is being made to take off these trucks, of course, in collaboration with the customers, to take off these trucks off our roads. And I would be even more pleased, Chairperson, if a concerted effort is made with regard to manganese that is ferried from Northern Cape to Port Elizabeth. The amount of trucks on our roads in the Eastern Cape is just crazy. It's just crazy. But you know, I'm pleased that some work is being done. In the report, it was mentioned that about 3,500 trucks have already been moved off the roads, and those commodities are moved by rail. So I would really, you know, further urge Transnet to work even harder in moving these commodities using rail. The second one, Chair, which I really missed, I could have. I'm trying to juggle between two meetings, and I'm sorry. It's no disrespect to your meeting, Chair. I may have missed this point. The 15 people that sadly passed away, I think it was Transnet Ports.
just want to say, Chairperson, the time for the pillow paper is too short. Can the Transnet make sure that they extend the time? Because let me give you an example. During this COVID, the pillow paper was here. And because people, they want the services of pillow paper, they will flock there with numbers and numbers. No social distancing because they wanted to get services. And some of them, they sleep there. So that's why I'm saying if they can extend time, maybe if it's 2 weeks, they can add with another week to say 3 weeks for the community to get the services of that pillow paper, because it's doing the very excellent job to our communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Ngwenya.
Thank you, Chair. And also thank you for the answering of my question. Although Honorable Mdise have covered me up about extending time of Pela Pepper and the good work that the Pela Pepper is doing in our community. Chairperson, my question, my follow-up question is, I wanted to check what is the current state of the rail tracks that are used by goods train and passengers train. I'm asking this question because the maintenance of the train track is a responsibility of the Transnet. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Those are the question. I think one area that the CEO just touched on a bit is on the pipeline and the issue that relates to it being a national key point. And she did not touch much in terms of the role that we need to play as the committee to assist that, because I think it's one area that can assist in reduction of the theft. I will start with the acting chair. I saw you were back on the line.
Yes, Honorable Chairperson, Mr. Matibe, thank you very much for allowing us as board members to be part of this interaction between Parliament in the form of the Select Committee, Transnet and the Department of Public Enterprises. I think this is a very important interaction indeed between us as stakeholders. And the issue we are discussing is, as the GCE was saying, serious enough to warrant the single-minded focus which we sought to give it through this briefing. It is this serious given the devastation which the pandemic has caused to economies around the world, including ours. So we do have a serious responsibility, I guess, and we are all conscious of that responsibility, to ensure that we don't talk about COVID-19 in the past tense, because we happen to be on level one. It is very much something of an ongoing challenge that we are facing as a nation. You just have to watch, and I hope that we are sufficiently sensitive to the necessity to do so, to watch the global debate that is taking place today about COVID-19, What do we do about it? Where are we with respect to finding the vaccine? Can we rely on herd immunity? I'm saying all these things are being debated right now. And they are issues to be watched by practitioners, ourselves as lawmakers, the policy makers, and ourselves who are running state-owned enterprises. Because, as I say, the temptation is there to start thinking about this problem in the past tense, in view of the slowing of the daily cases that you would see in places like Cape Town, Johannesburg, and Durban. And therefore, think that we can meet to discuss this problem, but just pass it in passing and start to discuss everything else that bothers us. I'm not saying everything else that bothers us should not be discussed, but I'm saying this particular issue, since we had lined our interaction on the basis of this issue, it is serious enough to warrant single-minded attention. And perhaps we needed to ask ourselves whether we did give it that attention. I'm saying this because we should be worried we have moved from level 5, now we are in level 1. But we can see all around the world, severe restrictions are being reimposed given the resurgence of the pandemic that is noticeable everywhere. A comment was made here about some of our employees who lost their lives because of COVID-19. That speaks to the ongoing task of shielding all our employees, especially the vulnerable. And I thought that this is one of the things that we will be discussing in a more focused way than I think we have done today. Because what is happening in the world today and in our country calls for greater policy engagement, calls for greater so I am saying that yes, I think it will be important not to just receive follow-up questions in writing, but to have a session that properly gives us the opportunity to stay focused just on this issue and not to deny ourselves the possibility of being rigorous by discussing everything under the sun. So, but I'm saying this was an important interaction from the point of view of the board and from my side as standing in for the chair, I'm going to report to the board what happened today, and we will also make sure that the board stands in readiness to make its own contribution to whatever Parliament decides to ask us to do. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Mr. Zimela.
Thank you, Chair. I think, I mean, most of the follow-ups were mostly comments than anything else. So we have taken note of the request, I mean, for the Pelo paper to time to be extended. And we will take note of that, Chair, and see what we can do in terms of how the train is scheduled and rostered to stay a little bit longer. I also took note of the comment about the need for us to move even more trucks off the road, and especially, I mean, from the Northern Cape to Port Elizabeth Lake. So I've taken note of that, Chair. There are, I mean, initiatives that were already currently underway. So I would hope that the next time when we have a follow-up, we can give a little bit more of a positive story as to the additional trucks that would have been able to move off the road at that point in time. And then in terms of the first question, Chair, I mean, relating to the protection of our assets, I mean, from theft, maybe I wasn't a little bit clear. So there are, I mean, various initiatives that are currently being undertaken, which is what the GCE actually spoke to, where we are also partnering up with various stakeholders, such as the SEPs, you know, to try and assist us to reduce our cable and our equipment on the infrastructure. But what I was talking to in terms of technology is that we now realize that it's not going to be a long-term sustainable solution. So alongside all of the initiatives that are currently being undertaken in partnership with external security stakeholders, we are equally looking at the utilization of technology to make sure that in the longer term, we're able to further reduce the theft of cable and some of our equipment. When I spoke about a three-year period, I was talking in terms of the significant amount of work it would take and the period it would take to convert the cable on our network. Transnet runs, I mean, 33,000 kilometers of rail network. So it was really from, I mean, that perspective that I was talking about a three-year period to fully implement it right through our system. But at this point in time, we have started by identifying the hotspots, and then the intention is to ensure that we have completed the full network in the three-year period that I mentioned. Then there was a question relating to how we are and what are the initiatives we're taking to ensure the maintenance of the infrastructure. So just to be accurate, we have an infrastructure which is a Transnet infrastructure. TRASA has its own infrastructure, and there are areas where we share infrastructure between the two entities. And even where we share infrastructure between the two entities, it will either be a TRASA infrastructure or it will be a Transnet infrastructure. So Transnet takes responsibility for the maintenance of the infrastructure that belongs to Transnet. And we have been continuously ensuring that there is work done on our infrastructure and in all of the various corridors. There is some major work that will continue or would need to be done on the infrastructure. And some of that was slowed down by COVID and our inability to bring in some of the suppliers with the big machinery who help us to do some of the major, I mean, maintenance. But we continue to do what is absolutely necessary in maintaining our network efficiently. So we don't have the responsibility of maintaining the PRASA network. It's PRASA network and they take care of their network. But earlier on, I mentioned that we have been working very close with PRASA to try and assist them as far as possible in any area where we can, which included us even providing them with diesel locomotives in order to restart their service, because without us having assisted in providing them with some of the diesel locomotives, they would not have been able to restart some of their passenger services, especially, I mean, in the Pretoria area. So we continue to assist us as far as we can when there is assistance that's required from our side. I believe I've covered all of the questions, Chair. Then the last question, I think, was around the average age of the people that we have unfortunately passed. And I know that the question was probably being posed specifically to the ports. But I thought that, Chair, because I had also shared statistics as well on some of the people that we, or colleagues that we were unfortunately lost through this pandemic, that I should just give a little bit more detail in that regard. Most of the people that unfortunately we lost during this period in our space were between the ages of 30 and 55, we did have 4 cases of people who were above 50, but we had no cases of anybody who was over 60, because as we indicated earlier, Chair, the over 60s had already been kept, you know, at home and largely during this period of time. Thank you, Chair. I don't know if my colleagues, Vedide, would like to add anything more in relation to that.
Vedide?
Yeah, let me do that. Chair, we're seeing a similar profile, 30 to 55, in the same vein. Those that were over 60 were kept at home, and those that had comorbidities, I hope I pronounced this word, I can never pronounce it, that were vulnerable, were also kept at home. And most are still at home, and people only come back to work after they've been thoroughly examined and medically, and also then given a green light to come back to work. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thanks to the board as well as the senior management of Transnet, together with the committee members, for the engagements. There are quite a number of issues that we raise, which will require Ms. Muzimela that you relate with the CEO in terms of issues that will require responses, written responses. But we'll still have another engagement, depending on the possibility of time between now and the end of the term. We'll check. If it's not possible, then we can do it in the next term as early as possible. There are quite a number of issues in relation to the CAPEX, the PPE procurement, as well as security issues in relation to the infrastructure, as well as the issues relating to which I raised, the national key point, the pipeline. Those are some of the issues that we need to come and have a discussion. I think we'll also relate to Lebogang, to the minister, more especially on this issue of the national key point, so that all these assist us in terms of preserving our infrastructure, looking at the devastation of the COVID-19 on the economy. We might not have, the fiscals will be quite strained to be able to deal with the other issues relating to new infrastructure. So we should be able to spend the money that we have reasonably, knowing that we might not have a space to move in terms of the money that is needed. So all those issues that we related will request that we be given responses to the committee in a written form, so that whatever issues the committee is able to look at it. When you come back again, we do follow up in terms of the progress, more especially in relation to the security of the infrastructure, as well as the procurement. Thank you very much, Acting Chair of the Board. We can release you. We need to remain as the committee to deal with the internal logistical issues. You are released, Acting Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chairperson?
Yes, Loli?
I think we are lacking quorum. We are only 5.
Okay. No, that's fine. If we don't have quorum, as long as all the minutes are there, we'll be able to deal with them next time. Is there any issue? Okay.
Loli umbalile phela sijoyine late ngoba une whips meeting. Ngibalile ma'am, ngikubalile ma'am. With you we are five. There are five members. It's Honorable Arnold, Honorable Ngwenya, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Nana and Honorable Modise.
Okay.
Loli, sorry Chair.
Yes, Honorable Arnold.
Loli, can you just correct the minutes so if we have another meeting, if I'm not there, maybe...
I have already corrected them.
You have made inputs for correction.
That
is not right, economic freedom fraud.
No, it's not that.
I don't know. Thank you very much, honorable members. As and when we next week, I must indicate upfront, Loli. I'll be writing depending on what time I have finished the writing. I'll be able to join the meeting as well. I'm writing exams.
What time is your exams, Chair?
I'll send you the timetable. I'll send you the timetable. But next week we are meeting SAFCOL to deal with the issues in relation to SAFCOL. Thank you very much, honorable members.
Good luck in advance. Good luck.
You are saying what?
Good luck.
100%.
Thank you. 100%.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.